So we're going to talk about lasering your Isaac down. We've got this lesson. We've got, I'm actually okay. I'll be fine. And so we've got this lesson tonight, and we're coming up over the next few weeks, and then we'll flip it around, and we're going to be going into to hope and starting over the curriculum. But these last few lessons really put a bow around everything you've been learning for this entire cycle. And again, just to remind you, as we get toward the end, you keep coming until you get it, until you realize God's good. He can be trusted. He loves you. Your identity's in Him, and He's enough. And so I would encourage you not to leave until you get that figured out. And don't miss the opportunity that this chaos provides you. And so we're going to start with a little story with regard to what that looks like, what it looked like in my life. And I realize that it's a pretty dramatic story. It's one that most people quote when they say, "I heard you say something." It's one out of three times it's this story and that they remember. And so I just want you to remember, I don't equate myself with Abraham, right? But like Abraham, I didn't get here on my first night, okay? And I still struggle with laying my son down from time to time. I think I do, and then I get soft, and I'm still in that battle. But one night, or one day, several years into it, thank goodness he didn't ask me this on the first day. But in our struggle, when I began to realize the enablement that I was doing, and Jenny and I began to get on the same page and getting the pushback, at one point he said, "Well, I just, you know, this is not working out like I wanted to. You guys don't get it. I'm just going to go kill myself." And so I had never, it's the thing that everybody in this room fears hearing. It's the thing that many of you have heard. It's the thing that scares you the most. And, he said it in a way that was fairly legitimate, that you couldn't argue with it. But, for whatever reason in that moment, you know, and the reason to pray, like we talked about a couple of weeks ago, is to prepare you for moments like that. And sometimes I've noticed in my journey, I say things that are coming out of my mouth, and I'm wondering who's saying this exactly. But in that moment, I just said, "Son, I crazily didn't hesitate much. And I just said, I just want you to know something, that I will never be the same if that happens. I will miss you. I love you. I will never be the same if you lay your life down. But I've learned one thing. I can't stop you. You know, you're 20 years old. You run faster than I do. You've got more resources to get away from me. I can't stop you from committing suicide. I can't. But I'll never be the same, and I'll miss you because I love you, and it'll be a waste. But I want you to know that Mom and I are going to go on, that I'm going to go on. I'm going to laugh again. I've got a race that's marked out for me, and I don't know what God's up to if you commit suicide, but I know He's good, and I know I've got a race, and I'm not responsible for you. So I think it's a bad decision, but I just want you to know it's not going to paralyze me. I'll weep at your funeral, but Mom and I are going on to run the race that we have, and I'm gonna love your sister well and our family well and lead as best I can, and I'll see you on the other side." And so that story was actually in the Watermark News in February of 2010 when we started this ministry. And in there, my son quotes that in that story, he was quoted for the article, and if you'll read it, says that he knew the jig was up, so to speak, that there was no more leverage. Now, many of you, I mean, I've done a couple of funerals since I've been here. And so, I mean, not done them, but participated in them. And it's not common for the newcomers. It's not common that it ends like that. It's not. It's very, very rare. Over 8 years, I can remember maybe three families that lost a kid in this ministry. But it just is going to happen. But they're going to use that. And how do you lay your Isaac down? Because every one of us worries about what if they don't realize the jig's up. And so we're going to talk about that tonight. So Tonight we're going to talk about understanding Abraham's life, and I'm going to just rip through Abraham's life as quickly as I can, because there's so many teaching points in this lecture that I literally was sitting there on Sunday as I was going through it and say, should I break this up into two lectures? So I'll get you out on time, but I'm going to have to scoop. So understanding Abraham's life is a model for our own. How do we lay our Isaac down like that? Why laying your Isaac down is so important. And then what do we gain when we do that? Why did God ask Abraham to lay Isaac down? The promise, the covenant. Why does he ask us to do it? And then maybe an examination of our role and our purpose in this prodigal journey. So it's a really important lesson. So I just want to refresh for you real quickly Abraham's story. In Genesis, it goes 12 Genesis 12 through basically Genesis 22. And he says to Abram, Lord said to Abram, your country and your people and your father's household, and go to the land I'll show you. I'll make you into a great nation. I'll bless you. And whoever curses you, I'll curse. And all the peoples on the earth will be blessed through you. So Abram left as the Lord had told him. He packs up all of his stuff in a place of comfort. The Lord said, go, and Abraham left. So, but Abraham had a plan along the way. It says down in the next verses, you know, when the going gets tough, the tough goes to Egypt. There was a famine in the land, it says, but nowhere did it say God said go to Egypt. He said go to where I told you to go. But Abram thought, surely God didn't get the memo on the drought. I'm headed to Egypt. That looks like the best plan. And so there, what happened was he lied about his wife being his sister. It led to sin, which often happens when we go our own way and not God's. But what happened in God, what Abraham saw was God redeemed the day. And he stayed faithful to his promise to Abraham. And Abraham, despite that, getting caught up in sin, he actually left, and God had redeemed that with great riches. And so I love this next story about Abraham along the way in 13, where basically God had prospered them so much that Lot and Abraham had so much stuff that they couldn't stay, and the land couldn't support both of them. So they got up on a valley, and they said, he gave Lot the choice. Abraham was the man. He could have just said, Lot, you're going there, I'm taking this. But he said, you can have either one. So basically downtown Dallas with all of its riches in the country, and Lot chose downtown Dallas where all the money was being made. Maybe a bad analogy, but the fertile ground, the green valley where all the people were and commerce was being being carried out, and a dry desert. And Abram said, I'll take the dry desert. And the story is that Lot got sucked into sin. God blessed Abraham no matter where he was, and he chose the comfort, and Abraham is blessed once again by God. Lot was captured in a war. So Abram rescues, just like God does throughout the Old Testament, Abram at that time rescues Lot against armies that captured him with 318 men. And Abraham gives God the glory, and he encourages Abram with renewing his covenant. They go back. We're into chapter 15 and 16. Abram grows impatient because God's promised him a son, and so he sleeps with the maidservant. Out of that, Ishmael is born. He's got marriage trouble. Sarah's bitter. They got family issues. And it says, and Ishmael has been a wild donkey and his descendants ever since that we struggle with today. And that's the cause of his sin. But again, in the chapters that follow, God's merciful to him, and he's faithful. And he had a covenant, and he stayed by his, he grew Abram through this. And so he finally gives him the covenant of circumcision, and Abram's prayers are heard by the Lord. He spares Lot from destruction in Sodom and Gomorrah. The details are great. I've always say when I go through this, after we look at this, I just think that if I'm discipling men or talking to men about how God works, I love to go through these chapters. Because Abram was the father of a great nation, but he was a knucklehead, totally. And people can relate to that, right? And so he sins once again. He lies to Abimelech. He rationalized the manipulation as a little white lie. If that gets too close to home, I'm sorry, I didn't write it. God redeems the day, and finally Isaac is born with Abraham and Sarah in their old age. And he reaffirms the promise. So in 22:119, with that as a background, to go back and read through that this week would be a great Bible study, especially if this lecture impacts you, just to go back and see how God works in people's lives and how Abram could get to the point where in Genesis 22:1-19, when God asks Abraham to go up on the mountain and sacrifice his son, that's in verse 2. In verse 3, there was no delay. Verse 3 goes right in and says he got up early the next morning. I'm not getting up early the next morning, even if I'm faithful. I'm dragging my feet to take my only son up the mountain and sacrifice him. And so he told the people in verse 5, we will return. He unflinchingly got up early, went on the mountain, because he had walked with God and knew who he was. If anybody knew God at this point in their life, Abram knew God, and that's why he could do it. So there's a lesson in studying his life, how Abram, God's not asking for perfection. He's asking for faithfulness and relentlessness and pursuit of him, and God will show up. So he raises his sword. God rescues Isaac at the last possible moment. And so God's response is lived out, and we see it in Romans 8:28. He worked all things for good. He kept his promise by blessing Abraham with a great nation. And that covenant is there in 22:16-18. I won't read it. But blessing them as a nation, numerous as the sands, grains of sand on the ocean, on the beach. So God's response was he provided a way out. There was a ram in the thicket, a substitutionary sacrifice. And the cool thing, I mean, I have been preaching for the last 6 months. If any of you have known me over the last 8 years, it's February, I guess. It'll be 8 years. God's done a work in changing me because I'm a scientist and I love apologetics. I love the fact that our faith is incredibly reasonable. There's facts, historically, archaeologically, textual criticism. If you want to talk about that, man, you make my day. I love it because no faith stands up to be a reasonable faith like Christianity. But I have, you know, changed my paradigm. I love that. But what I also know is that facts and obligation and obedience for obedience sake, just because it's your parents' faith or you have no option, you can't do that in and of itself. You have to fall in love with the Savior. And so I love it because you get both. You get a God that loves you and you're a beloved child of the King through grace and mercy, but he's given us facts to make our faith reasonable. So check this out, right? He provided a way out with a ram on the thicket. Where was this being held? Mount Moriah. You know what else happened on Mount Moriah? Okay, so it pointed the way toward Jesus' substitutionary sacrifice on the mount where the Temple of Solomon was built, where Jesus was found and tried and was found guilty, where the Dome of the Rock is today, and where a third temple will be built and Jesus will rule on that mountain. That is cool because you can go there and you can touch it and you can visit it and you can document it. We're not making this stuff up. Right? And so it's awesome. So Abraham's life was imperfect, but I find great hope that he was faithful. He persevered. He somewhere along the way, through the study of who God was and accepting Christ, seeing God's mercy, seeing him show up, seeing him deliver, in war and in sin, he began to get an idea of who God is. And I would say that as we study his word, we have the word, we have his word. He tells us who he is. But the last piece for me is to go out in faithfulness, in serving others, in praying for things that you think are maybe impossible, and depending on him and watching him show up. That's what happened to Abraham. I think when you do that and you experientially allow God to rule in your life and don't get out in front of him, and then you get amazed at when he shows up, you become like Abraham and you fall in love with a Savior that's reasonable to trust, and you can lay your Isaac down. So he grew to trust God's provision. And Matthew 10 in the New Testament says the same thing. You've got to love me. God was essentially saying, we're going to talk about this a little more, but I want you to remember this first. Anyone who loves his father and mother more than me is not worthy of me. And anyone who loves his son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. And so anyone who doesn't take his cross and follow me is not worthy of me. So the point is that nothing can come above God. And that's a key to following how Abraham viewed how this whole sacrifice of Isaac proved where his priorities were. So I think I've talked about this, is that Abraham, God grew Abraham through hardship and trouble. And that's true of our life. You wouldn't be going through those doors today if you weren't experiencing hardship and trouble. So guess what? You're in the same position that Abraham was. And so don't miss this opportunity. And so he worked all things for good because Abraham believed. And so I just believe that God knows we might be obedient for a moment out of loyalty or that reasonable faith. But unswerving faith, in my opinion, can only be born and maintained out of a loving, intimate relationship with the King and knowing you're loved by him. So we must know God before we trust God. How do we lay our Isaacs down? It's knowing God. Word, community, prayer, experience. And, you know, as Jenny used when she used to give this, this was Jenny's talk. They were so good, I stole it from her. And so, you know, we can trust an unknown future to a known God. It's hard to drop your babysitter, hard to drop your kids off with a babysitter you don't know or trust. And so you can't drop your kids off. You can't lay your Isaac down unless you know and trust the God that is taking care of your kids. Because if you don't do that, and if you don't trust God with the problem, guess who has to be God? Not a good job. We're ill-equipped. I know we all think we are, but we're not. And it leads to stress. And again, I doubt you'd be walking through that door if you were at 100% peace. So this is a struggle. The prodigal ministry is a means lovingly to point you back to the truth, to point you and to hear people around you tell you that we've seen him show up. He's shown up in our lives. He's worthy to be praised. He's absolutely to be trusted. And in that, when you get to that point, you can have peace in the midst of your chaos. You just can't control the outcome. So Francis Chan, in his book called Crazy Love, says it like this. He says, worry, there's a lot of quotes tonight. And so this handout, they're all in there. So just rather than write them down or whatever, just bathe in it for a second, because you're going home with every one of these. Worry implies that we don't quite trust that God is big enough, powerful enough, or loving enough to take care of what's happening in our lives. That's what worry is. Both worry and stress reek of arrogance. They declare our tendency to forget that we've been forgiven, that our lives here are brief, that we're headed to a place where we won't be lonely, afraid, or hurt ever again. In the context of God's strength, our problems are small indeed. Importance in our prodigal journey, and I don't think, let me go back, I don't think Francis Chan or myself or anybody that knows the truth of what he just got through saying is not saying this is painful. I mean, that's not what he's saying. He's trying to say, I know it's painful, but don't forget, this is a brief and transient time, and God's got it, and rest in that. And laying your Isaac down is we say that. Have they laid their Isaac down? And people, leaders will say, hey, Burns, you know, I don't think those people know what you mean by when you say, have you laid your Isaac down? It's kind of, so just as a definition, laying your Isaac down is giving God total responsibility for your adult prodigal. And it is the hardest thing that you're going to do on this journey. People say, they walk through the door, and we don't ask you how, if you were saved tonight, you know, if you died tonight, are you sure you'd go to heaven for, just because we grew up Baptist. We want to know your faith. And it's not because we're judging you or treat you any different. The problem is, you know, spoiler alert, is I don't know how anybody lays their Isaac down if they don't have a faith. I just don't understand it. And so I don't even know how to tell you what to do. So you're welcome here, but I think I'm going to fail you if you're looking for an alternative, because this is the hardest thing to do. The only way you can do it is if you know who God is, and you know he's big enough, and you know he cares, and you know he's loving. I don't have another answer. And so don't leave the ministry until you figure that out. I think people have done that, and they've come back. And so I'm not saying this is the only way out, but we've got a solution, and it's not our solution. It's God's solution as outlined in his word. So it's... It places God in the proper priority. It's God's model for prodigal relationship, as I mentioned last time. I've got these rules, and all sinners are welcome to come. All repentant sinners are welcome to come in to my house. But this is the boundary, and it's based on a belief in him. It grows our relationship. So I would just tell you that fear of losing your prodigal, the fear that he had when my son told me about suicide, is the fear that paralyzes all of us. And if he'd asked me, I don't know if he'd asked me a day sooner, certainly a year sooner, I just can't imagine that would have been my answer. But God in his grace allowed me to say what I said that night because I believed that God had it. And maybe I was just tired like many of you are and say, I just don't have anything left. But fear is what paralyzes us. And if you're paralyzed by that fear in regard to the outcome of what's going to happen, then you're never going to be able to stop enabling. They got you. When we go over a plan, we're going to talk about that in the next couple of weeks. And we'll have a plan. If they do this, I'm going to take away the phone. And if they do this, they're going to do this. And then there's going to be work. But the very bottom of the plan, the last line in your plan, is if they fail to do all those things and they continue to be rebellious and whatever, there should be a consequence in which you're going to go and let them. There's a way that seems right to man, but in the end it leads to death, and you're going to let them go out and see what life looks like without you. It's what we call the ultimate consequence or the nuclear consequence when you've done everything. You don't do that on the first day, but after a season you do. But if you are struck by fear, those prodigals are going to threaten you with suicide or overdose or whatever it is. And until you really trust God, that God's got the outcome and they can't die a day sooner or later than what's predestined for God to be. You can't, they can't, and as long as you don't believe that and you're in fear, you're never going to be able to stop enabling. You're never going to be able to lay your Isaac down. And if you don't think the prodigals know that and they have you, you're just being naive. They know it. They'll use it. They love you. You're their little kid that you rocked in their arms. But they're not above it. They love their the drug addiction and their idol worship will make them do crazy, crazy things, even though they love you. And so you'll hamper or delay the potential of your own relationship with God in the process. So this is March 24th, Oswald Chambers. I'm reading the whole thing. Okay. So and it says, John 3:30, he must increase and I must decrease. I want you to think about this as a parent, and it's hard to argue with this. If you have trouble with this, talk about this in your group. But listen to the wisdom of Oswald Chambers. Based on scripture, he must increase, Jesus must increase, I must decrease. By the way, this is Todd Wagner's mission statement in life. John 3:30 puts it on, if you look in, if he writes a note to you, he'll put that on there. If you become a necessity to someone else's life, you are out of God's will. As a servant, your primary responsibility is to be a friend of the bridegroom. When you see a person who's close to grasping the claims of Jesus Christ, then you know that your influence has been used in the right direction. And when you begin to see that person in the middle of a difficult and painful struggle, do not try to prevent it, but pray that his difficulty will grow even 10 times stronger until no power on earth or in hell could hold him away from Jesus Christ. Over and over again, we try to be amateur providences or God himself in someone else's life. We are indeed amateurs coming in and actually preventing God's will and saying, this person should not have to experience this difficulty. Instead of being friends of the bridegroom, our sympathy gets in the way. Enablers' motives are pure. Everybody in this room is here weeping because they love their prodigal. You just get confused like I did for many years of what that love looks like. So to pick it back up, we're indeed amateurs coming in and actually preventing God's will and saying this person should not have to experience this difficulty. Instead of being friends of the bridegroom, our sympathy and love for them gets in the way. And one day that person will say to us, you're a thief. You stole my desire to follow Jesus, and because of you, I lost sight of him. Listen intently with your entire being until you hear the bridegroom's voice in the life of another person, and never give any thought to what devastation, difficulties, and sickness it will bring. Just rejoice with godly excitement that his voice has been heard. You may often have to watch Jesus Christ wreck a life before he saves it. We see it in this ministry all the time. Some people were asking me about it, and I just said they wanted to know. In the last week, it's been crazy. I've asked the leaders to pray about prodigal for 18 and just sit back and just watch what could happen if we really prayed. Remember, 2 or 3 weeks ago, we talked about prayer and how we just all got inspired by that. And for the first time ever, these two guys came up and said, hey, what if we threw, you know, we see your passion and our company wants to maybe make you our target, and what if we threw some money at the prodigal? So we want to give back. And I'm just blown away by that fact that someone would do that, and we're answering to prayer. But I have no idea where that's going. But I'd ask you all to pray for that. We don't need the money. I don't want that to come across as being anything. We've never had a dime. We don't need a dime. But my point is, who knows where that's going and where God's working in this ministry. So basically, what do you gain by laying your Isaac down? It's a greater relationship and intimacy with God. Witnesses strengthen, you become a leader, people will follow, you follow the truth and not emotion. More trust, more peace, you'll keep in perfect peace with him whose mind is steadfast because he trusts in you. Basically, there's an eternal reward saying, well done. And the thing that I don't want you to miss is that by doing this, you're going to provide the optimal recovery environment. In other words, you might come in here and say, wait a minute, this is all a bait and switch. It's all about me. I mean, this is not what I came for. My prodigal's in crisis. I need to get this taken care of. And we love your prodigals. Sometimes I can understand how you might be confused by that, but we love your prodigals. We know what they are. We have them ourselves, but they're not here. And so we can't make them do anything because they're not doing anything for you. They're certainly not going to do it for me. The point is, if you do these things, you're going to model for them, and you're going to model for them and you're going to provide the optimal recovery environment for them to come home. And one of the things that I wanted to get back, I lost my train of thought a second ago, but basically when I was talking about the fact that we see it, when these people were asking about the money, they'd say, how can you describe it? And I said, all I'd love to do, and I want you to hear this, is that we see it work. We see these plans work. We know that the fear is tough, and to see these lives wrecked and whatever, but we see so many of those people that go to the bottom and come back. Some of the bottoms are different. But I just said, if you want to have your company understand what we do, I just want to come in there and tell you stories about people's lives that have been changed. And we got a million of them. I mean, I could tell you 100. I got them on my computer. Every time somebody tells me, I say, write it down, send it to me. I got a whole list. And so I want you to know they're in there. They don't always turn out great every time, but some of those stories are where the parents are doing great despite their prodigals. Many times the prodigals come home, and so I'm not in charge of the outcome, but you need to hear from the fact that when you hear something hard like Oswald Chambers talking about wrecking a life before he saves it, it's biblical. Look at the stories in the Bible, and it's how many of us came home to a point where we were in the gutter and realizing we finally came to the end of ourselves. So I think when you lay your Isaac down, you fulfill your personal mission statement, your God-given purpose. You prepare yourself for the rest of your life. If you can lay your Isaac down, if you know God is good and you trust him, when you walk out of here, I've said it a million times, then go. Go lead a ministry at your church. Take prodigal to your church. Work here, in, if not in prodigal, in something else. Because if you're equipped, if you can lay your Isaac down because you trust in the King and that he loves you and your prodigal, if you really believe that, you are the most valuable servant to the kingdom out there. There's nobody more powerful than you. Satan hates you. Be prepared. He's coming after you if you think that. And because you can go out there and lead any ministry, because every single ministry is teaching that one thing. I don't care if you learn the pain through dealing with an abortion or a bad marriage or whatever it is. They're trying to get you to understand that despite that pain, God's your only answer. He's the only hole that can. He's the only person, only thing that can fill the hole in your heart. He's good. He's enough, and he loves you. So don't miss this opportunity. So why did God ask Abraham to sacrifice? God forced him to choose. And anything he chose above God would be an idol. Basically, you don't know you have an addiction. How many people say, I don't have a drinking problem. I don't have this problem. Well, you don't know until you have to give it up and you can't do it. And God wanted Abraham's full devotion above all else. I think God knew where Abraham was, but I think by asking Abraham to do that, I believe that God wanted Abraham to be sure that Abraham put God above all else. And so Keller, in his book, we've got it out there. I can't remember which one it is. I think it's I'll think of it in a minute. But basically, God's extremely rough treatment of Abraham was actually merciful. Isaac was a wonderful gift to Abraham, but he was not safe to have and to hold until Abraham was willing to put God first. As long as Abraham never had to choose between his son and obedience to God, he could not see that his love was becoming idolatrous. Abraham took that journey, and only after that could Abraham love Isaac well and wisely. If Isaac had become the main hope and joy of Abraham's life, his father would have either over-disciplined because he needed his son to be perfect, or he would have under-disciplined because he couldn't bear his son's displeasure. You ever been there? Hitting a little close to home. Or both. You vacillate back and forth. He would have overindulged him, but also become overly angry and cruel, perhaps even violent when his son disappointed him. Why? Because idols enslave. Isaac's love and success would have become Abraham's only identity and joy. See codependency. He would have become inordinately angry, anxious, and depressed if Isaac ever failed to obey and love him. And fail he would have, since no child can bear the full weight of the Godhead. So why did God ask Abraham to sacrifice Isaac? Because of that. Because he wanted Abraham to be certain that he would put him above. And when he knew that, he could love, he could lead himself well, he could lead his family well, he could lead Isaac well, he could lead a nation well that changed the world. And so we talked about Christian love. He wanted to make sure that he loved God above his father, mother, daughter, and sons. And why does God ask us to lay our prodigals down? Because how much more powerful we are to the kingdom, how much are we more of use when we know the same thing, when we know that we put God above all else. So in this journey, it's going to come to that point at one point, because the things we ask, I want you to know that the things that we ask you to do in closed group and from the podium and whatever, the reason you have those handouts, the reason you have slides with scriptures on it, is this isn't our idea. This is not our plan. This is, if I was God, I would have no plan like this at all. It would look much more loving and compassionate to the world, and it would fail miserably, right? Because God's plan is perfect, right? So it's his plan. It's all we're doing is telling you, and we see it work, and it gives you the freedom you want. So what if this prodigal journey, at its core, is actually about you. When I read this slide on Sunday, something jumped out at me, and I thought, you know, I never thought about this till Sunday again. That's why I love giving these messages, because I'm such a knucklehead. I guess I got to go through it 15 or 20 times to finally get it. But you know what jumped out at me on this time for the first time? I'm looking at that picture. How often have I talked about Isaac tonight? You know, he's not a prodigal in this story, but the point I'm making is it's all about Abraham. It's the only thing you can control. Isaac's not in the picture. I hadn't talked about Isaac. I hadn't talked about it. And yet, it changed the world forever. I mean, Abraham led a name. I mean, the power that that guy had learning through this journey. And so what if, at its core, this was about you? And I will tell you something. I've had a lady that used to work for me. It's the first time I've heard it, and I've heard it a lot since then. But she said, "I thought you were the most arrogant so-and-so. When you stood back there, I was so angry when you said, 'What if this is about you?' And here I am 6 months later, and it's all about me." And I will tell you, the people that are changed when they hear that are the people that get it, and they do unbelievable things coming out of this ministry. And the people that take offense to it, I get it, I understand, challenges with it. Just keep showing up. Don't let me irritate you so much that you stop coming. But what if this was really about you? What if God said, "Hey, you know, I have got so much in store for you." I've told people that have come here, they know this story, but it's worth repeating. When I was going through this, I wasn't a bad guy by the world's stage. I'd led a Bible study for 11 years. I was a worship leader. I was a deacon in my church. You'd think I've reached the pinnacle of religion. And when I look back at my intimacy with God at that point, it was a fraction of where I am now. Look at this room. I mean, what else could you? I'm the most privileged guy in the world to be able to do this, because my journey led me to a deeper walk with him, that a more trusting. I knew him better, and everywhere along that journey, he's taught me what a knucklehead I am and that I am not God. And although I'm a ball juggler, welcome to the club. We're all going to hell unless we ball jugglers get nothing out of it unless you believe in a God that loves you. And so this journey was about me, taking me to another level. And God said, "I know you're doing all that, but boy, I have got something that you are going to love doing. I've got something that you're good at. I've got something that I'm going to bless you. I've got something that you don't even have to do. You don't have to plan it like all your other ventures that half fail and half... This is going to be the most successful thing you're ever a part of, and you don't have to lift a finger. You just have to show up." And that's my story, I'm telling you. No plan. Here we are with a 20-week curriculum, 5 weeks of open group, a podcast coming. You know what I mean? I didn't plan that. This could be you. I want this to be you. I'm not putting myself on a pedestal. I'm just telling you what God's done in my life. And so if you don't miss this opportunity, I just can't wait to see what's going to happen to every single one of you if you're faithful and you don't miss this opportunity. Not that I'm passionate about it or anything. So we hope what changes is you, because that's the only thing we control. In the knowledge of who God is, greater trust in him, greater faith in relationship. Faith allows you to glorify God and live your purpose with joy regardless of your circumstances. People notice when you're the calm person in the storm. This is about you. I know it's late. I'm going to tell you a quick story, okay? Sorry I'm running over, but I heard this story today. And you'll be the first ones to hear it. I'm sure Todd's going to use it in the message. But I was supposed to go on a hunting trip, and I never turned down hunting trips, ever. And this was a really nice hunting trip with a jet involved. I've maybe been on two in my entire life. And I didn't go because I'm traveling so much, and I just thought, Jenny's going to kill me. So I told her in the middle of the weekend, not wanting to lose the chit I might get by telling her that I turned down this hunt. She said, "You turned down a hunt in that plane to go to with those people? You're an idiot." And I said, "Boy, I wish I'd have known that." So I saw one of the wives today, and I said, I told her that story, and she said, "You heard what happened, right?" I said, "No, I don't know what happened." She said, "The plane was going." This is Todd, Dean, the elders. The plane was at 40. Have you heard this story? Oh, he did? Did he talk about it? Yeah, so not all of it. So I didn't know he had told it in the church. But anyway, he was at 40,000 feet, and they lost, they didn't lose a wing, but they lost pressure in the cabin, and everybody started getting woozy, and just kind of the same thing that happened to Payne Stewart. And, you know, and so I talked to the wife today, and she said that she started getting these cryptic texts like, "I love you, you know, I've always loved you, you know, tell the kids I love them." And she's going, "That's weird." Todd sent a text to all of his kids, and they prayed and said, they looked at each other and said, "It's been good, man." And the pilot has sweat down to his waist, and an oxygen mask dropped out. The pilot got saved. They went from 40,000 feet to 6,000 feet in like a minute and a half, 2 minutes. And they pulled out of it. Everything was okay. And they didn't panic, right? I mean, they knew he was good. That's laying it on the line, right? I mean, and the pilot sees these six guys that should be flipping. They're praying, they're texting, and no one's panicking. And so that could be you. And this could be the first step in that journey to know that he's good and you have a faith like that. So I'm just going to slip to the back in the sake of times, and all these verses are great. I just want to point out that faith and saying you know it without actions is not really a faith in action, and you have to, faith without works is dead. And so we're going to ask you to do some tough stuff and lay it down. And so the other thing is, what if God takes your son and you lay, or your daughter or your prodigal, your husband, your mother or father, and he doesn't give him back? What if there's not a ram in the thicket? That's the tough thing. Is he good? His plans are beyond our comprehension. And so that journey, you have to answer that. And I would ask you, is that too much to ask? And I would just close by reading this, is that the faith chapter in Hebrews 11 is the Faith Hall of Fame. Look at the people who never saw the ram in the thicket. They never knew where it was going, but by faith they stayed the course. All these people that he's just named, David and Enoch and a hall of fame of Old Testament characters, all these people were still living by faith when they died. They didn't receive the things promised. They only saw them and welcomed them from a distance, admitting they were foreigners and strangers on earth. People who say such things show that they're looking for a country not their own. Those people on the plane knew this was not their home. If they had been thinking of the country they had left, they would have had an opportunity to return. Instead, they were longing for a better country, a heavenly one. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he's prepared a city for them. And I would say that, as I'll close with this statement, as Oswald Chambers says, I think we're all in this journey, when we face our hardships, when we have to lay our Isaac down, we're at this point. And Oswald describes it like this. He says, not often, but every once in a while, God brings us to a major turning point, a great crossroads in our life. From that point, we've got a decision to make. And we can either go toward a more and more slow, lazy, useless Christian life, or we can become more and more on fire, giving our utmost for his highest. Our best for his glory. Lord, I thank you for how clearly you point out our options, how clearly you beg through every scripture, from Genesis to Revelation. You're relentlessly pursuing us. You're showing you love knuckleheads. You're showing that you forgive us if we just come back. There's nothing too great that keeps us separated from you if we just admit our faults and come running to you. Lord, give us the strength to take the action items. Give us the strength, give us the motivation, the clear vision of who you are, so that we might have your Spirit drive us to the point where we can, at that crossroads, become more on fire with you and give you our utmost for your glory. Be with our discussion tonight. Forgive me for going long. I love you. In Christ's name we pray. Amen.